The Wall Street Journal said he's one of the most innovative minds in football.
He's a rat.
ESPN once called him the guru of the spread.
Scumbag.
Football Scoop labeled him the mastermind behind college football's number one offense.
Nobody likes him, not even his family.
He took three separate teams over a five-year period and made each a top-10 offense.
Yeah, but he's such a horse's ass. He was fired by future United States Senator Tommy Tuberville in the middle of the season, even though he had a 5-2 record.
No wonder CBS Sports said there's never been quite a coach like Franklin. He marches to a different beat.
Pariah, an outcast, a person or animal that is despised, shunned, or avoided. Warning, buckle up and put your big boy pants on. This isn't your friendly kiss-ass coach's show. If you can't handle the truth, eject immediately.
And now, from parts unknown, it's the Pigskin Pariah. The one, the only, Coach Tony Franklin.
Wednesday, November the 17th, 8:18 p.m. After 11 weeks of the season, we finished the SEC yesterday. Let's go right into North Carolina and North Carolina State rivalry. North Carolina lost at Pitt in overtime. And here's the thing about this series as it gets ready and it's getting closer. They're 1 week away. North Carolina has Syracuse this week. NC State has Wofford this week. North Carolina is just a really difficult team to figure out. 1 week, they are phenomenal on offense. The next week, they can't score. They look raggedy. They're a matchup team that they have to match up well against. If they do, they can score 50 points. If they don't match up well, they have trouble moving the ball. They have trouble scoring. The defense isn't elite enough in order for them to win when that happens. And so whenever they play a really good team, they're going to struggle. But the thing about last week that was unusual, Pitt is a high-scoring team. North Carolina's defense played well enough for them to win, and the offense against not a great Pitt defense at all, the offense just didn't really show up. And the quarterback is spectacular. It was, a great game to watch because you got two potential first-round quarterbacks playing against each other. But North Carolina, watching the film today, they're just a team that if they can't run by you, they're not going to have very many 15 play drives down the field. They got to hit their big shots in order to win. The quarterback's good enough to make plays on his own, but it's just been just a season that if they're not more talented than they are, then they're going to struggle. NC State, on the other hand, has played at times close to elite defense. They play Wake, and Wake Forest is, as I've said numerous times, one of the best offenses in all of college football and definitely the best coached offense in all of college football. Gone out on a limb, have a style of a run game RPO that nobody else in college football does. That takes guts, takes courage to do something unique and different, to create something that is different than what anybody else has ever done in the history of football, where they have the slow ride of the running back into the line of scrimmage, and it has worked like a miracle for Wake Forest. North Carolina State, I thought, would be able to match up really well with that, but they didn't. And they were in a shootout, and they ended up losing 45-42, I believe, was the final score. The week before, North Carolina had won a shootout against Wake. Wake is still with one loss going to Clemson this week. But getting back to the rivalry, if you compare those two and you throw everything together, you look at both their seasons, both teams up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down. I thought NC State is still the most improved offensive football team since the beginning of the year until now. They've really become a good tempo RPO team. But for whatever reason, defensively, they didn't have any answers against Wake Forest. But still, I'm going to choose the better of the defenses in this rivalry. And so after 11 weeks, my pick is North Carolina State 34, North Carolina 32. We have to talk about Cincinnati every week. They still looked ugly against a really bad South Florida team. South Florida is just not a good football team, as I've said all year long. You know, they're not good offensively. They're not good defensively. They've been able to stay in some games as of late, which is normal. The later a season goes, a team that's been bad a lot early in the season, you can show your players film after film. You can tell them that they're going to be tough. You can tell them that they better be ready to play. The bottom line is players watch film and they see it, and it's hard for them to convince that they've got to give their best effort in order to be successful. Cincinnati goes to South Florida, and again, against a bad team, they just don't dominate the way that they should. Cincinnati this week has SMU at home. SMU is a good football team. And, you know, it's a funny game. Cincinnati just needs to win this game and then win the championship game. I think they've got East Carolina the final week, and then they've got the championship game against Houston if they win those games. And I believe that they'll do it, but I wouldn't be shocked if SMU doesn't beat them this week. I'm still not a believer that Cincinnati should make it if they're undefeated. I just don't believe that that's a criteria. I think that if you're in a conference that doesn't have the schedules of the power conferences, if the schedules are not as tough as the power conferences, then a one-loss team in the SEC, a one-loss team in the Big Ten deserves it, unless Cincinnati played four really good Power Five teams, which they didn't. So I'm still going to say that they don't deserve to be in it unless several people lose, which is still a chance. However, Cincinnati has got their work cut out for them with SMU this weekend. We'll talk about that a little bit more when I pick the games tomorrow. Michigan-Ohio State rivalry. Michigan, big win at Penn State with one exception. I just don't think, and I said this a long time ago with Penn State when I saw them early in the season, they're not an elite team. They're not even a really good team. They're not a top 20 team. They're a top 40 team. When you lose to Illinois in nine overtimes and you can't punch it in, you're not a very good team when you're at home. But Michigan went in, took care of business. Had to score late in order to win the game, but they still won. A win on the road with 100,000 people is good no matter what. And the only thing, as I told you several weeks ago, I think it's been 3 weeks in a row that I've been scared to death that Jim Harbaugh would screw it up at Michigan, because they had a run where Coach Gattis was able to do all of his RPO stuff, and then all of a sudden it just shut down. And they haven't done it for about 3 weeks. And I don't believe they can beat Ohio State without that. They still are getting more conservative every week. The good thing for them, they got Maryland this week, so that's going to be an easy win. Ohio State, on the other hand, plays Michigan State. Ohio State, in the game against Purdue, Ohio State just scored at will. Purdue couldn't get lined up. If you're watching a bad high school team have trouble getting lined up against a certain scheme, that would have been Purdue this last week. They couldn't get lined up. There were people running open all over the place. It wasn't just a physical mismatch. It was an alignment mismatch and not getting lined up and not playing good sound defense. It was really ugly to watch. But with that being said, Ohio State really struggled against Purdue as well. Purdue moved the ball throughout the ball game. Ohio State was way ahead at half and scored 40-something points, but they got a couple of turnovers. Purdue gave Ohio State problems. So here's what I'm getting at. Ohio State plays Michigan State this week. That could be a little bit of a problem, because Michigan State, with the running back, might just hit Ohio State's defense in the mouth enough that they could score 40 against Ohio State. If they do that, Michigan State's not going to stop Ohio State. But if you get in a scoring deal and you're 40-something to 40-something in the fourth quarter, anything can happen. Ball gets tipped, turn the ball over. What I'm saying is watch that game closely, because if Michigan State is able to just cram the ball down Ohio State's throat, because Ohio State's front seven is not an extremely physical defense, if they're able to do that, then Michigan may be able to win the game against Ohio State. I believe that if Michigan plays what I call wad ball, where they line up with two tight ends, a wing back, and just power football, they might be able to do that and bully Ohio State. They might be able to do that, but they're going to have to hit some home run shots, and the only way that you can for sure do that is to RPO it. And the fact that they've completely shut their RPO game off, with the exception of one play against Penn State on the goal line, they got in a big set, two wideouts, they faked crack blocks with the wideouts on about the two-yard line going in, faked the power play, faked the crack blocks, and hit the receiver over the top after he faked the crack block. And I believe it was an RPO. It looked like it because of the way the offensive line was blocking, but that was it. So with all that being said, what does that mean in this game? The rivalry game right now, I don't believe that Michigan can bully ball Ohio State for an entire game. And because of how the offense has dramatically gotten more conservative, I'm going to have to pick Ohio State 38, Michigan 24. The Oregon-Oregon State series. Oregon struggled with Washington State throughout most of the game till the fourth quarter, where they pulled away after they got a turnover. Washington State was almost even with statistics. Oregon ran the ball well. Washington State had been playing pretty good football, but Oregon still just right now, they've never really had that groove that they had early in the season. Even though Moorhead is back coaching now, he's had a couple of weeks in a row. The offense has played better with him being back calling the plays and coaching in practice. But there's just something to where they just don't look as physical as they once were. They've got to beat Utah. If they beat Utah twice, they're in. I don't care what anybody says. If Oregon beats Utah at Utah, then they turn around and beat them in the championship game, Oregon's going to make the playoffs. But for the playoff game, for the rivalry game against Oregon State just beat the living crap out of Stanford. Stanford is bad. Stanford was playing their third quarterback of the season. They've gotten worse as the year has gone by. Oregon State just stuck it down their throat. And they had great play action. Quarterback Chance Nolan played awesome. Oregon State is hit and miss. Play great, play average. Play great, play average. Play great, play average. I think Oregon State will tell us this week whether or not they're ready to play Oregon. They've got Arizona State at home. If they beat Arizona State and look good doing it, they got a shot to beat Oregon. If they get beat up by Arizona State and don't rise to the occasion, then I believe that Oregon could blow them out. But right now, I've got it being a close game. Oregon 34, Oregon State 27. And that game is a game that I look forward to watching and seeing. I'm going to stay with Oklahoma, and I'm going to add Oklahoma State because that's really a better, as good a rivalry as Oklahoma-Texas. We got to keep following Oklahoma State because they got a shot to get in. Theoretically, Oklahoma does. I said about 4 weeks ago Oklahoma would lose two games. I still believe they'll lose at least two games. They may lose three. Oklahoma got bullied by Baylor. Baylor whipped their ass. Oklahoma's coach went and whined about a late field goal. That's never a good sign. At the end of the deal, Oklahoma's quarterback showed he was human. He struggled in the pocket. He struggled with his read progression. He struggled with being able to make plays. Baylor had a great game plan against him. Baylor showed everybody else the rest of the season how to play Caleb Williams. They brought in Spencer Rattler. He was the same Spencer Rattler he was when he went out. Oklahoma simply is just not a dominant offensive line. Their offensive line usually can pound it out where they can run the ball. They can't do that. The quarterback had just been making plays for them. He showed he was human like all quarterbacks are. The defense played good enough, which is unusual, but the defense played good enough throughout most of the game to give them a chance to win if Oklahoma's offense had showed up. But with that being said, Oklahoma has Iowa State this week. Iowa State is Two of the last three games defensively looked really bad. Got beat on a last-second 62-yard field goal. Gave up over 500 yards of offense against Texas Tech. Got beat by West Virginia a couple of weeks before that. People figure stuff out. Like I said a couple of days ago, Iowa State's defense has been figured out. Oklahoma, however, I think will struggle still against Iowa State. I think Iowa State will beat Oklahoma this week. Oklahoma State, on the other hand, TCU comes in hot after firing Gary Patterson. New quarterback and the Morris kid, the coach's son, Chad Morris's son. They have just looked like $1 million. And then guess what? They played against what might be an elite defense in Oklahoma State. And they got their ass pounded. Oklahoma State has the perfect formula to be able to drill Oklahoma. Oklahoma State's got an interesting game at Texas Tech. Texas Tech with the new head coach. Also, Sonny Cumbie getting the interim head coaching job. They rose to the occasion for him this week. But I think they really rose for the occasion of their new head coach, Joey McGuire, coming in. Oklahoma State, I still like in this rivalry game. I believe that I've got them winning the game 24-17 right now, but that could get bigger if Oklahoma loses another game before that game. USC-UCLA, that rivalry is this weekend. How about that? UCLA beat Colorado 44-20 because they got their quarterback back. Dorian Thompson was back. USC was open because Cal had a COVID outbreak, so they didn't play. So does that give them an advantage playing USC this week? I think that having an open day, getting guys healthy, always is good if you handle it right. So I don't know how they handled it, but if they handled it right, they should be the fresher of the two teams. However, I do believe that UCLA is playing for a little bit more. I think they're playing for their coach. I think if he loses this game, he's fired. So my guess is UCLA, the players that are there now, would like to keep Chip Kelly. I'm going to say they have enough incentive. They played well enough against Colorado on offense that I believe defensively, I just don't think USC's patient enough running the ball, and I don't believe they can run the ball. Even though UCLA's defense is not an elite defense or not even a good defense, and they gamble all the time. But this is not a well-schemed offense either for USC. So I'm going to say that UCLA wins this rivalry game on Saturday, UCLA 34, USC 23. We talked about Michigan State earlier, but we were talking about the Ohio State and the Michigan rivalry. I think you have to keep mentioning Michigan State because they've only lost one game. Hey, if Michigan State beats Ohio State, they're still in the picture to make it into the playoffs. I think they can play Ohio State close because Ohio State's defense can struggle with bully ball. If the running back gets hot early, they could be in for a shootout. I'm going to say Ohio State wins this game. They're favored by about 20. But I believe that they'll win that 38-35. Another rivalry game goes out this weekend. That's Stanford and Oregon State. I'm sorry, Stanford and Cal this week. Stanford got blowed out by Oregon State last week and looked really, really bad in it. Oregon State doubled the yardage in it. Stanford played their third quarterback. Cal was open because of COVID, had 20-something players that had COVID. So this is a weird game trying to pick. It's a great rivalry game. It's just called the big game. And, you know, I was in that game three times. It's a fun game. People really care about it. It doesn't matter if neither team had won a game, they would still care about that game. It's a great rivalry in college football. But both teams are hard to predict right now. They both have looked really, really bad. I'm going to say that Cal has looked the better of the two as they both have gotten worse. I'm going to pick Cal to win this rivalry 34-27. We've got to talk about Notre Dame because I'm going to tell you, sometimes the football gods are really weird. And I believe the football gods are for Notre Dame. There's never been anybody that only lost one game in the season that got so lucky in a schedule. They scheduled these games 5 or 10 years ago. They played a bunch of good name teams. And every one of them, with the exception of a non-name team, Cincinnati, which is the only game they lost, but all the other teams they played just had a bad team this year. And so Notre Dame just got very, very lucky. So they play Virginia last week, and Virginia's got one of the best quarterbacks in all of college football. He can run. He can throw. He's a great player. So what happens? He's hurt. He doesn't play. They catch another big break, and they win the game 28-3. I just think that Notre Dame's football gods may be with them. Their defense is playing better. Marcus Freeman has done a hell of a job of making that defense because they weren't very good early in the year, and they've gotten better. But, man, I'm telling you, you better watch out. A couple of people lose, about three people lose. Notre Dame can literally sneak into this. Listen to who they've got left. A bad Georgia Tech team and a worse Stanford team. That's it. So they're going to finish 11-1, then sit and watch the championship games. And if everything goes their way, Notre Dame could end up in the playoffs. How about that? Unbelievable. Finally, Army-Navy. Army finishes with Bucknell Navy open. The game is 3 weeks away, and nothing's really changed. The way I look at it is this. It was a blowout early in the year. Army was going to win the game, 3 or 4 touchdowns. Basically, right now, nothing's really changed except the last 3 weeks. Navy has found a way to win against a bad Tulsa team and to play close against a good Cincinnati team and then to get blowed out by an average Notre Dame team that figures out ways to win. So what does all that mean? Army should still win the game by a couple of touchdowns in the rivalry series, but Navy, if they get 2 turnovers, can win the football game. So it's going to end up being a great Army-Navy game. Other couple of big things in college football that have happened in the last few hours. Michigan State gave Mel Tucker a unbelievable offer, $90-something million for 10 years, so almost $10 million a year. I don't know if he signed it yet or not, but that's big time. Obviously, it's going to make him maybe the highest-paid coach in football, which means that there's a whole lot of other coaches that are going to get some big raises. Supposedly, LSU offered Lincoln Riley, Oklahoma's coach, an 8-year contract for $96 million, $12 million a year. Man, I love America. You know, it's the free market enterprise. You're always worth what somebody is willing to pay. So more power to everybody out there. Get what you can get because they will fire you just as fast as they hired you. But man, when you can walk away with a $50 or $60 million, that's a pretty good deal. And so keep paying them guys all that they can get. Going to be an exciting week. Tomorrow I will have almost every prediction in big-time Division I football as well as little-time Division I football as well. Take care. We will talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to today's show. One, go to coachtf.com/podcast and leave us your email so we can send you your free download for our Pigskin Pocket Card, which gives you 10 simple steps to follow daily to ensure an amazing life. Two, do something good today for someone who can never repay you, and you'll have truly lived an amazing life. Three, join us Monday through Friday for new episodes and download any of our episodes wherever you get your podcast or simply download from our coachtf.com/podcast. Four, give us a 5-star review today so we can continue to put together entertaining and informative episodes. Always remember, do good, no repay.